I grew up at Jansen, here, right here at Jansen Bible Church. My parents and us, we all lived on a farm about 6 or 8 miles from here, and we attended Diller Community Schools, from kindergarten through high school. But every time the church doors were open on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday evening, our parents took us to church. We were there. There wasn't an option, usually. We had to be here. And so we all did our chores in a hurry and always got to church on time. So it was growing up in this church that many times I heard a fairly clear presentation of the gospel, and I'm sure it was along, you know, when I was very young, I believed in Jesus for eternal life. But it wasn't until a vacation Bible school when I was about 12 or 13 years old that someone asked me about it. You know, I don't think anybody ever really talked to me personally about this, you know, whether I was a believer or not. And but that particular time, this teacher did. And when somebody asked me, when did you become a believer, I usually point to that time because that's probably the most meaningful time that I can remember. So I like to point that time, about when I was 12 or 13 years old, something in there. And so it was vacation Bible school, so that's an important time for in a church too, to reach young people. And then, of course, Jansen Bible Church has always had missions conferences. They've always supported missionaries. And so, of course, us kids, we were in church during those times, and we heard many missionaries giving their presentation. Tina Dick was one of them, you know, and we heard that growing up. And so that is kind of where my interest in missions started to come from. You know, I began to consider during my growing up years, well, maybe this is something that I could do. And so that kind of just stuck with me all through high school. I knew I wanted to go to Bible college, but when I graduated from high school, probably wasn't quite ready yet. So I went to Fairbury Junior College. There's a college here in town at that time. Later, switched to Southeast Community College and moved to Beatrice. But anyways, I attended there 2 years, and then after that, I went to Grace University, Grace College of the Bible at that time. So I was there from 1977 to 81. I graduated in 81, and I had a major in Bible and a major in missions. So so I studied missions, and of course, there's missionary conferences at Bible college, too, all the time. And so I gathered all the information and talked to everybody, but it was mostly confusing to me. Okay, so many options. What do I do? Where do I go? And so I even went on a short-term, two-month missions trip during my junior and senior years. So I got out of Grace, not knowing what direction to go. So I came back here. Moved back home, helped with the farming, got a job in Beatrice for a couple of summers, and that's the way things were going. Then one time there was another missions conference here at Jansen. Thank the Lord for that. And at that time they had a representative from SIM. His name was Bud Acord, and he found out I had a missions major at Grace. He says, "Let's talk." After one of the services. So we did. We talked for a while, and he said, you know, if you're just sitting in one spot, you know, it's hard for the Lord to lead you. You need to take a step in some direction. And, you know, he gave the example of, you know, when the Israelites were in the wilderness and they wanted to cross the Jordan River, you know, the priests went before everybody with the ark. And once they stepped into the water and got their feet wet, that was when the river parted. And he says, you need to take a step in some direction and see how the Lord leads. And he says, the next step for you is here's an application for SIM. He said, well, this doesn't mean you have to join SIM. It just means you're taking a step in some direction. And so, okay. So I followed his advice, and I ended up in their candidate school, which at that time was in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. And during that, I don't know how long it was anymore, 4 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it was, You know, they have time to evaluate everybody, and they looked at this farm guy from Nebraska and said, "You're not ready to go overseas yet." So you don't have enough experience living away from home. You don't have enough experience living in some cross-cultural situation. So we would like you to do a one-year internship at First Baptist Church in Flushing, Queens in New York City. That's a cross-cultural situation. They knew about the church. And at that time, Christar was holding a summer training and outreach program in Muslim evangelism. And this is, we want you to take part in that too. Because at that point in time, I thought I was heading to Liberia, West Africa with a friend of mine. We were going to be a team and we were going to go. And so I went there went there for a year. And that's where I met Nancy. So I'm going to let her take over from there.
Kind of left you hanging.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before continuing, we're going to have a bit of a prequel. So I was born in West Germany to Canadian Air Force parents, and was subsequently raised in Canada. Our family was a religious family. We belonged to a mainline church. None of us understood the gospel. We were all working our way to heaven through tradition and good works. When I was 22 years old, I finally heard the gospel in my hometown of Kelowna, British Columbia. And that night, the speaker was speaking from the Gospel of John, chapter 3. A conversation that Jesus was having with an old, pious, righteous, Jewish Pharisee. And he told that man that he would never see heaven unless he was born again. And when I heard that, I understood that what my problem was. I was simply dead. And I needed spiritual life. And I needed eternal life. And so that night, I placed my faith in Jesus Christ for just that. Some months after that, I was a bit of an Ellie Mae Clampett to the Christian scene, but they accept me into Bible college anyways. No, it's not a stretch. I didn't take any of my critters with me, but 3.5 years in Bible college, and in a couple of things I learned at Briarcrest Bible College in Saskatchewan, I learned about missionaries. When I found out that you could spend your whole life telling other people the good news, just like someone had done for me, I understood what I was supposed to do with my life. I remember thinking, you can do that? I could be that? I was accepted by, the other thing I learned was there was this group of people in the world called Muslims. They were 1 in every 7 people in the world back then. I think it's 1 in every 5 now, something like that. And there was very few people reaching out to these people with the gospel. So I figured if I just have one life, why not put that one life where there's the most need? And Christar accepted me. And, you know, it was 5 years to the day that I accepted the Lord, that I was on a plane as a single woman of 27 flying to Pakistan for 4 years. I was supposed to be 4. And I studied the Urdu language, the culture there, and began working with a very experienced female missionary nurse in a completely Muslim town, very conservative, out in the middle of nowhere. And I cut my teeth, as it were, in that place, in Jaunpur, Pakistan. After almost 2 years there, I came back to get more experience, to rest, because it was a pretty exhausting experience, and to get more experience working in a local church. So I ended up in New York City at First Baptist Church in Flushing, Queens, working. Now you know the rest of this, well, not quite. Because they had a neat internship program there. And so I was accepted, and I think it was day 2 or 3, whatever, very early in my days there that I met Don at a staff meeting. And it was a packed room because they had all the pastors and all the interns and everything, and it was this guy sitting in the back, craning around the people to get a look at the new intern. And I thought, well, he what a nice face. He looks married. but he wasn't. So anyways, we courted New York City, and we were married on Valentine's Day in 1987 in Kelowna, B.C. 2 more years in New York City, getting used to marriage and raising additional support, etc. We left for Pakistan in 1989. Now, my testimony, as I thought about it, it's not just my testimony. I just thought about you guys. I thought about Janssen Bible Church and how very much you guys are so intertwined with my life, our lives, that it's really you can't separate them anymore. We have never furloughed anywhere else but Fairbury, which was wonderful for us, but also our kids. It was like they're always coming home to their friends, to the same area. Not every missionary kid gets that. They could have a different town every time. But our kids, you know, this was their home base in America. 1989, we went to Pakistan for almost 4 years. We worked at a technical training and Bible school. Don taught theology. I taught Bible to ladies and children. And the Lord gave us our first son, Christopher. So we returned home in 93 with baby in arms. And a home was given to us to live in by Dr. Gordon and Janice Johnson on G Street. And they also gave us their Chevy station wagon, red, I believe. And that was such a blessing to us. He was a traveling doctor at the time, and they weren't living at home. But she'd come home and decorate the house for the next season. Of course, you can imagine Janice doing that. She wasn't even living there. And so we got to enjoy it, except for Christmas, then we had to leave, but we came back. Then we went back. It would have been in 93, 94. We went back to Pakistan to continue our work there, and we came back 4 years after that. I think it was in 4 years after that, we came back, and we had another child. That was Curtis. And then we were given a house by Tina Dick to live in on D Street, and a station wagon to drive. Because Tina was in Africa at the time. You were doing some ministry there. And so we had that lovely home to live in. And adopted Curtis, his citizenship. We had wonderful times of fellowship here in the family. That's the furlough I remember, growing closer to the women in the church here. We had a Bible study in Peg Friesen's house. And remember that, Melissa? Melissa, remember that? And it was a wonderful time. We returned to Pakistan It doesn't matter. We went back. 98. I think it was 98. With the two kids in tow, continued our work at the technical training and Bible school. And then I'm homeschooling, in counseling. No, just kidding. Then 9/11 happened. And we were out of there in about 2 weeks. And we never returned. We thought it would just blow over and we could go back. But things didn't blow over. And security situation worsened in Pakistan. The school we had the kids registered in was attacked by terrorists just before our arrival. And the school was subsequently closed. And that was our schooling option. 4 years of homeschooling was enough for our entire family. You heard about the... I don't know, there was a fictitious woman, some parent that said, no, we don't homeschool, we're pro-life. But anyhow, so there's a little bit too much laughing here, a little bit too much here. Anyways, so we came home, it was a sudden return. Normally people know you're coming, they can prepare to help you in some way, or housing, whatever, but still Janssen rose to the occasion. And Doug and Paula Friesen gave us their home on H Street to live on in the 900 block. And when we got home, the place was furnished. There was food in the fridge, I think, from Dave and Jackie. And we were ready to go. We put the kids in public school and thought we'd be going back in a year. We thought things would settle down, and then they didn't. And then the New Delhi field opened, where we could still use our Urdu language and culture, and there was plenty of Muslims there, in that city of 25 million, just the city, 25 million. That's like, what, 10 Nebraskas or more? Anyhow, I want to rub that in. We went in 2003 to New Delhi, India. Chris was 10 and Kurt was 8. And we began ministry in earnest, in a church planting among Urdu-speaking Muslims in New Delhi. We came home in 2007, approximately, and we moved into Ed and Peg Friesen's house on H Street. Now, the Schulteses and the Heidemans will have to help me, but I think you've given us about 4 cars between you to use. I can't remember which came first, and of course, the famous one that got totaled.
One of them wrecked.
We'll talk about that one. You made out good on that with the insurance, I remember. It was hilarious. So the car was like a write-off, but actually did very well on the insurance. So then the Schulteses gave us a check for $100 after all that, which I thought was very interesting. A very interesting way to make $100, but anyhow. So 2007, again, blessing us. This church has always been there. They've always ministered to us. They've prayed for us. They have encouraged us. They've listened to us. They've given to us. You guys are it. I mean, this is our home base. It just, you see how it's always like that? It's always like that. So we went back in 2008, and then we returned for 2010 before Chris's graduation. We had a visa problem, not us, everyone with the type of visa that the kids had, and we had to leave. Remember that? We had to leave India and stay out for 2 months, and that's when Julie Katz opened up her her house on H Street. We can't get away from H Street. Someday we're going to be on J, but anyhow, on H Street, and I forgot, the Katzes let us use their place on 5th, the Manhattan Suite, on the Fairbury Executive Suite, because the Friesens needed their house back, so I don't want to leave that one out. That was a fun place to live. And where was I? Oh, yes, we're on H, and then Don went back to India. I stayed with the boys till the visa issue was resolved. We went home, went back to India, and we were back again for Chris's graduation about 6 months later. He graduated from high school. We came home to get him settled. We were back in Ed and Peg's place on H Street. The Weeby family in Lushton have a missionary car, so they often let us use that car. I guess the Heidemans and the Schulteses got fed up with us, but the Weebies, no, but they provided the car. Now, the Righteous Rider people are here, and this is got to be a wonderful ministry. I don't know much about your ministry, but all I can say is the blessing to us of always, pretty much always knowing we had a vehicle before we came home was you can't count it. We didn't have to fuss. We didn't have to wonder what we were going to do, where that money would come from, would it be a good car, what to do. But it was always in place for us almost every time. So this is a wonderful ministry. Where was I? Oh, yes. Okay, so the kid in UNL, then, back. H Street, and back with one son, and then 2 more years that son graduated. We came back again, then we were back in the executive suites. Judy Katz gave us a place there, and we lived there until she needed the suite back, and then we started mooching off Dave and Jackie, and they can't get rid of us because they don't move and we know where they live, and so it's done. And they're on H Street, so someday Kay. But anyways, so we did more than just come and go. A lot of seed sowing. Many tried this, tried that. Failure. Much failure, get up again, try something else. You know, failure is not what it is more data. I just want to encourage you, if you're trying something now and it goes south, more than not, just you're collecting more data. Failure is very, very important part of life. So we have lots of that. You will, and I'll just say the last 2 years, of our life in Delhi was the best. And it was like God saved the best for last. We worked in we've shared about this, worked in the slum of 5,000 families underneath an overpass, spread out here and there, and a train going through the thing, and we were able to teach Bible to Hindus and Muslims on a weekly basis, and working with an Indian church, and we absolutely loved it. As I look back on my life, it's not rocket science. I think that, generally speaking, I obeyed the Lord when He told me to do something. Yes, did I blow it? Yes, I did. Sometimes I dragged my heels. Yes, I did. But I think, generally, I've learned to just obey the Lord right away when He's telling you to do something at every turn. Whether it's in understanding a new truth, if someone gives you correction, if there are challenges and mountains, impossibilities, whatever, in all those things, I just want to encourage you to. It's the best thing to do. Because when you look back over your shoulder, you'll see everything was just right. Just obey the Lord. Maybe tonight that's something you need to do. You know, they say, you know, when you're married, you should never go to bed mad. What do you say? Stay up all night then or something? What do you say? I don't know if he said that, but he might have. But I think, you know, that's true. You shouldn't go to bed mad with your spouse, but you shouldn't go to bed mad at the Lord. You shouldn't go to bed anxious. You shouldn't go to bed in sin, not confessing something. You shouldn't go to bed mad at the Lord either, or whatever, out of fellowship with Him. If you have to stay up all night, do that too. It's worth it. And then you can move on in your life. So it's really, really hard, but it isn't actually that, it's not rocket science. So this, all of this has resulted in our life's work and a life's partner, two fabulous sons, a more than fabulous daughter-in-law, in four countries, involving countless people, and very much involving you all. So now we're in my old hometown, which was, last I remember, pretty white. It isn't white anymore. We are the colors of the rainbow in Kelowna, British Columbia. And so we would... Wow. Phew.
Trying
okay.
to back it up.
We're getting fancy.
Huh?
We'll see about okay. that. So we would just like to tell you about what the Lord is doing now. And we have some people here have been there. Dave and Jackie have come to visit us. Janann is here. She's been there. Our Don's sister, Marilyn, has been there. And you're all invited, not all at the same time. But we do have a guest room. Kelowna is a city of 130,000 people. We're situated on the Okanagan Lake in the beautiful Okanagan Valley. It is famous for its fruit growing.
I'm trying to advance it. Huh? Well, maybe that's the reason.
See? That's why we need the millennials. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's more reasons. One comes to mind.
Duh.
And a vibrant wine industry. It boasts a quality university and college. Now, Canada's immigration policies are making it ever more diverse ethnically, including a substantial refugee influx. 21.9% of Canadians are immigrants currently. In British Columbia, 25% of our population is part of a visible minority in our province, 25% of the province. Now, the largest visible minority are South Asians. And that includes Sikhs, Muslims, Hindus from India and Pakistan. That's the largest group. How many people here are not familiar with what a Sikh is? Okay. Don will be teaching on that, and we'll be commenting on it even this slideshow. So you'll be well educated by the time this conference is over. Sikhs, the largest group. So the ends of the earth now reside in Kelowna, our Jerusalem, very much so. You know, we were at the rowdies for lunch today. And one thing I noticed is it's all white, which is fine. It's fine. It's just that I noticed it because Cologne is not that way anymore. It's a lot of different colored people there, and it's just the way it's happened in our country. So, and it's a lot more variety in takeout. Okay, food. So we have a brand new large mosque that just got built. It serves 300 multi-ethnic Muslim families, and this includes 300 foreign Muslim students. Mosque attendees represent countries such as India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Bosnia, Egypt, Indonesia, Syria. The mosque tends towards a modern and progressive view of Islam, including much freedom for women and tolerance for liberal interpretations of the Quran, their holy book. They seem free to practice their personal form of Islam. One Muslim woman, Anne, was at pains to explain that Islam doesn't mean women can't lead or do anything without a man present. They can lead and teach and be very independent of men, she told me. We don't need to be segregated from them. They're anxious to portray themselves as relaxed and tolerant of other faiths, just another group within society. Recently, members of our local church attended the recent grand opening of the mosque, which also included local dignitaries that were blessing the new mosque and the Muslim community in general. So there's two Syrian refugees, which are refugee families, which are sponsored by our church, the Alismars on the left and the Alisafs on the right, with a mess of kids between them. Sponsorship requires a commitment to support a family for 1 year in almost every way. So there's the Syrian Refugee Committee in the church of which we're members. This includes finding housing, arranging, helping them with language learning, helping and finding jobs, schooling for children, arranging for medical care. The child has a helmet. As members of a committee of about 12, we have been involved in taking them to dental appointments, helping with their children and transportation help. Just last the week before we came away, Mr. Alisaf failed his driver's road test, although he still looks happy here. Well, that was before the test. We took a turn to drive him to work and his kids to school. We love this family. They're awesome. We've enjoyed some wonderful meals in their homes. They are so thankful for all of our help. They're so grateful from the bottom of their hearts. You can't go there hardly without getting, they'll feed you. I mean, they're just tremendous in hospitality. We've been seeking ways to share spiritual truth with them with limited English because they speak Arabic, these Syrian refugees. Sometimes this is well received, our sharing that is, and sometimes our efforts are rebuffed, as when Anwar told us plainly that they didn't want any other holy books in the house besides the Quran. However, another time, this gal in the black burqa, her name is Furyal. She's in kidney failure presently, and so I was helping her with house cleaning, and one day we had this wonderful spiritual exchange, and she started it. And so I was able to share using Google Translate app on my iPhone, on her phone actually, the story of the woman with the issue of the blood through the, I can show you how the app works after, it's really cool. And she responded very happily. So we're thankful for technology like that. You know, we often pray with our Syrian friends. We pray in the name of Jesus, even if they don't understand all that we're saying, they appreciate our concern and our faith in God. They've been through so much. They've lost their homes, their country, certain relatives. They've spent time living in refugee camps or in exile. They're separated now from any living family members, except this family. The families are starting to congregate in Kelowna, but now they're fighting, so whatever. A lot of unhappiness. They cling to their Islam, but they can't really support them or meet their needs in the end. Mr. and Mrs. Alismar, who are there with some of their children and nephew and niece in particular, they've had serious marital problems. The police have had to be called in because there's been some violence. A restraining order was placed on Mr. Alismar, and then she removed it. So now she's pregnant and has twins, or she's pregnant with twins. However, after four previous C-sections, she and the twins are at considerable risk. You know, we just love and serve and wait for a day when their hearts will be open to listen and consider the claims of Christ. Don was going back and forth a bit with Mr. Ellismar on his phone while we were on the road here. I shared with him, "Come to me, all you that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And he wanted to know what that meant, and so it was a nice exchange. Sikhs have been trickling into Canada since 1897, but large-scale immigration didn't really start till the 50s. Today, there's more than 500,000 in Canada. So they account for between 1% and 2% of our population. However, they make up 14% of the Prime Minister Trudeau's cabinet. And the Minister of Defense for Canada is a Sikh. In our city of Kelowna alone, our mayor, that's not him, thankfully.
That is.
Oh, that is, yes, with the pink shirt. He's our mayor, he's a Sikh, and then that's my mother on the right, by the way, and my brother standing there. The mayor's a Sikh, and one of our eight councilmen is also a Sikh in Kelowna. They worship in two separate temples. The name Sikh means learner or disciple. They believe in one God. Their God is called True One and is not a personal God. He's known through devotion and human effort. They believe in the principle of karma, wherein this and future lives are determined by how one behaves in this life. Their three main duties of a Sikh are to meditate on the name of God at all times, to earn an honest living, and to share one's earnings with others. Salvation is all good works. Sikhs believe all religions worship the same God, and they're just all different paths to the same God. Their holy book is comprised of the writings of various holy men. The holy book itself is considered to be God on earth and is revered and worshipped as such. Don will be talking more about this tomorrow night. Shortly after arriving in Kelowna, the Lord placed these newlyweds, Mr. and Mrs. Totade from India, into our lives and hearts. They are believers. We have been mentoring these young believers in God's word for almost a year now, including post-marital counseling, because it was an arranged marriage, so they don't do marriage counseling when it's an arranged marriage. But after a year, they requested some help, but they're doing very well. Our goal is to expand our Bible study. Recently we joined them in an outreach Thanksgiving party to their Hindu neighbors. Our goal is to expand our Bible study to include seekers from the Asian community in Kelowna. The Totades share our vision. We are convinced of the need to work through the local church in our efforts to plant house churches among the least reached in Kelowna. In God's sovereignty, our local church in Kelowna, Mission Creek Alliance, contains those who have a vision for the least reached too. Don has been able to lead the men's group at church on a prayer walk around the local mosque and a Sikh temple, as well as teach on the need to reach the least reached in our community. The women's Bible study group got frisky and said, "How can we be involved in your ministry? We want to help. We want to encourage you. Come alongside you. What can we do?" While praying about this with a friend, the idea came to me to arrange for our women's group to visit the local mosque and the Sikh temple as a group to expose our women to these faiths. After doing this, we would invite them to our church for a Christmas tea and explain the meaning of Christmas to them. Calls were made, prayers went up, and the ladies' group was challenged concerning the venture. I wanted to expose our women not only to the bondage and the darkness of these belief systems, but I wanted them to actually meet Muslim and Sikh women for themselves, to make new friends, establish commonalities, exchange phone numbers, that sort of thing. The Muslims and the Sikhs I contacted were almost immediately on board. With dates in place, we began our adventure. On October 16th, just last month, 22 of our women arrived at the Islamic mosque for a tour, while three women remained behind to pray at the church. We first toured the prayer hall, and then we listened to a lecture delivered by four Muslim women. They had a PowerPoint all ready to go, and they shared with passion and conviction. Our women wore head coverings, so in the pictures it's kind of hard to tell who's who, but some of them are Christians. We wanted to show respect for their faith and traditions. And then we enjoyed a wonderful time of eating snacks and homemade delicacies from various countries and conversing with new friends over tea and coffee. After the lecture, we invited our Muslim friends to attend a special Christmas tea to be held at our church on December 11th. You have to pray. It's a big deal. One of our older Christian sisters, who is an artist, hand-painted three Christmas landscape scenes on small canvases, which were then converted to invitations. The response was enthusiastic from the Muslims to our invitation. We were expecting a good group of them to attend. The next week, on October 23rd, our women visited the Sikh temple. Again, warm hospitality was extended to us. A lecture was delivered in their worship hall by one of the leading men, who also ran for city council recently. I voted for him, but he didn't get in. Questions were fielded from our group. Some of the women sat on the ground, others sat on benches. We presented our beautiful invitation to them to attend our Christmas tea. A delicious snack was served with chai. We visited, chatted, and got to know each other. It was such a great and important time for us all. The gal that just go back one, Don. Of course, this is a dumb missionary thing. See the woman whose face you can't see? Anyways, her back's to us, so you can go forward again. Whatever. She's the wife of Mr. Lali Singh. And her and I got some time alone. And she shared her Sikh testimony with me of getting serious about her faith. They want truth. They want what we want, but they don't know the way. And I'm so thrilled we have this relationship. We want to have them over for a Christmas dinner around Christmas to our home, and also a couple couples from the mosque to our home, just to get to know each other better and build that context for sharing with them. It was a great time. You know, we sometimes use the expression, for such a time as this, to refer to being in the right place at the right time, right? Just like Queen Esther was. But I'm convinced it doesn't have to be such a dramatic event as rescuing the Jewish nation from destruction. I believe as we all walk by the Spirit in the context of the local church, every day is for a time, just for a time such as this. In Kelowna, British Columbia, our local church has found that the ends of the earth are now in our backyards. Muslims, Sikhs, refugees, Hindus, Buddhists, they are here. Are we here by God's sovereignty, or are we there? Because now we're here. Are we there by God's sovereignty for such a time as this? Did God bring us back for India for such a time as this? Yes. Yes. Brothers and sisters, pray for us.
Maybe you have some questions. We'll just take a few minutes yet. I know it's after 8, but yeah.
Yes, Jade.
What is the population of evangelical Christians in India and Pakistan? Do you know the number? What's the percentage?
Probably, I would say about 1-2% in India, okay. Maybe 2%, and then in Pakistan. 0.5% to 1%. That's
probably
just my guesstimate. Okay. Like very little.
So they're in the 1040 window, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's like 1.2 something billion people in India. So 1% is still quite a bit. You know, if you think, you know. Yes, it's like, but still. Yeah. So. Yes.
Tina. It's most prominent in India. Yes, it started in India, and in the Punjab, and I don't know if you've heard of the town Amritsar. That is their main center. They have a golden temple there, and they all like almost their Mecca almost. But it started there, and I'll share more tomorrow night, but it was kind of something that they weren't satisfied with Islam, they weren't satisfied with Hinduism, so they got this new revelation and started Sikhism.
It's in northwest India.
Yeah.
Riley?
A lot.
Yeah.
They don't exactly speak Urdu, but everybody from like the Punjabis, the Sikhs, you know, they all come from India, and so Hindi is a common language that they speak. The Hindus that are there's not too many of them. They speak Hindi. The the Pakistanis, they know Urdu, of course. But Hindi and Urdu are very closely related in their everyday common language, and so if we just start speaking the everyday common Urdu language to most of these people, they understand pretty well what they're saying, except for if they're speaking pure Punjabi, the Sikhs, that's their mother tongue, we can only get a few words here and there, maybe catch the gist of the conversation, but thankfully most of them know English, and so our conversations with them are almost totally in English.
But our Urdu works. I mean,
it opens the door.
Urdu speakers,
when they hear us speak the language and they know we've been in India, that helps us to draw closer to them really much quicker.
And even with the Arabic speaking, because Urdu is made up of three languages, Hindi, Persian, and Arabic. So we already have some Arabic words. And so sometimes they'll be talking, and all of a sudden we'll recognize one, or we'll throw in one, and then they're all impressed. So it's a little bit of a bridge. So. Yeah.
Maybe I missed this. I'm sorry. But what language does Syrian speak? Is it Arabic?
Arabic, yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's different kinds of Arabic too, like the Jordanians would have a brand, the Syrians, the Saudis. You know, it's kind of like Spanish. You know, the different Central American countries, they can follow each other, but it's like, they're from the Honduras. You know, everybody's the best, of course, you know, theirs is. So. Thanks for, sorry. Well, working with the Syrians, of course, we're in their homes, we're with their families on a regular basis. So that's really been awesome to mix it up with them. But otherwise, it would be out in community. There's a farmer's market every Wednesday and Saturday, and they are there. They're everywhere, actually. They're in our stores, in our parks. So. And that's fine. We can meet them, but we've been actually looking for access points, natural access points. So this Sikh temple visit by our ladies was really important because it was a natural thing. They like people to come and visit the temple, and so it was a natural way for us to meet the leading couple there, one of the leading couples. And now we can have them over, and maybe they'll have us to their place, and let's see where it goes from there. You know, you sort of want something that's natural, not awkward. So we've been seeking for that, and that's an answer. This was a real answer to prayer. So the ladies group was a great help. Plus, they got their minds blown. They had a great time. It was awesome, and everyone's going to grow in their faith. We heard a couple of the ladies were like, maybe they weren't so sure if there wouldn't be demons there or whatever. You know, people have. It's okay. You know, that's where they're at. You got to start there.
It's outside their comfort zones to go visit these places. And when I just wanted to take the men on a prayer walk one evening, I says, all we're going to do is we're going to walk around the mosque and we're going to pray. We aren't going to talk to anybody, just a group of men. Mm-hmm. And one guy says, that's outside my comfort zone. I'm not going to go. So, okay, that's fine.
So it's exposing where we are at, and that's okay. We have to start where we're at, right? And then we can talk about it. So, anyways. We don't know the rest yet. That's what you got to pray about, Chuck. You girls misbehaving, or you got a question, Jay?
You keep on raising your hand while you're still talking.
Okay, another question.
Don't wait for me to stop.
Interrupt. Question. Ask it.
See, we've lived among them for a number of years, so we probably avoid a lot of things we probably did do and might have done.
With the Syrians especially, the one barrier is language right now.
Yeah.
Because they're just new in the country. They're trying to learn English, but they've not progressed very far yet, and so that is a real barrier. I pray that they will learn English well so we can start sharing more freely.
And I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, these people, they've come to Canada, they want to be Canadians. Mm-hmm. Well, they do have dietary restrictions, so no pork, no alcohol. And so when we had our Muslim friends over last Christmas, we asked them, you know, does the chicken have to be halal? Halal means pure. They said, no, that's fine. Just no pork and no alcohol. So we tried to be sensitive to that. But, I mean, if you love people, and you're welcoming to them, and you're friendly, you can make about 18 mistakes, and they won't worry about it. They won't, because they know you love them, and they know that you're friendly, and you're trying to be friends with them. And people will forgive a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And next, you have to come tomorrow night. You can be here tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Good.
I brought her here, so she ain't leaving.
All right. Pretty good. Good plan. So we'll be sharing tomorrow about prayer requests. So I'll load you down, Tina.
Let's see, they are refugees from Israel or coming against Israel?
Well, Syria, because you had ISIS.
Okay.
Well, first you had the Assad's army in there, and then reactionary forces to him, and then ISIS in there, and then the Russians came, and so anyways, big time war going on over cities, over territory, and destroying buildings and people fleeing for their lives because they're getting bombed out, and so they've had to flee for their lives.
And are there Christians there that are refugees from Syria?
I haven't met any.
Right.
But I'm sure there are Christians in Syria, but of course,
there's a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in Iraq, it's a similar situation. But we hear about the Yazidis, who are kind of a different form of Christian, but a different kind of faith, but not Muslim. And but there are Christians in Iraq who've been persecuted. So, but I have not met any Christian Syrian refugees. I suppose if the church wanted that kind specifically, and if you wanted to sponsor, you could apply for that. I think you might be able to, Nancy.
How do they get to Canada? I mean, how do they get chosen, and then how do they end up in Canada?
Well, so this one family, they're in a refugee camp in Lebanon for 3 years, and probably very countries like Canada and America, they have refugee quotas nationally. And so their representatives would go to the camps to interview people. I don't know how the administration works, but I know that someone asked them where do they want to go. And they asked for Canada, I believe, but they didn't know where. So someone suggested Kelowna, and they went along with it.
So they have a whole bunch of refugees who are related, though, that end up in Kelowna.
Yeah, now they know where to come because their relatives are there, too. But I think I don't know how picky they are. I mean, but although I think they did want to come to Canada. They heard it was a good place. And so then they have to go through the vetting process, which is pretty extensive. And then the sponsors, they have to be vetted to make sure that you actually can underwrite all of their expenses so they won't be a burden on our system.
And then
they all have sponsors.
Yes, either the Canadian government directly sponsors them, or private institutions can offer to do that. So the woman in kidney failure, her husband and their three children, and she are Canadian government sponsored. And but the two families in our church course is through our church, and there are other churches in town that are doing the same thing. So it's both. And they fly. The flight is paid, is also part of what you have to pay for. So that was part of our bill.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your attention this evening.
Yeah.
We'll turn it back
Thanks for coming out on a
Pastor
cold night. Wow.
It's not cold in here.
Nope.